This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, Senators Obama and Clinton feud over a campaign donor, and new Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick already has something to be sorry for. Joining us today are Joe Davidson, editor for The Washington Post, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and Robert George, editorial writer, New York Post. So, Robert, I have to go to you. You're Mr. Politics. And so we've got Clinton in your neck of the woods, you know, a New Yorker, a recent perhaps New Yorker, and Barack Obama. They are going head-to-head over David Geffen, a Bill Clinton supporter, but he threw his weight behind Senator Obama, and adding insult to injury, the movie mogul reportedly told the New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd, "Everybody in politics lies, but the Clintons do it, quote, with such ease it's troubling." That's kind of damning. The Clinton campaign is asking Barack Obama to denounce the damaging comments. Senator Clinton spoke to CBS News about her demands.
I also believe it's important for people to take responsibility. Responsibility for people supporting them, responsibility for the things that are said that basically are, you know, in their names.
And while we're slinging mud, Senator Obama had this to say.
My sense is that Mr. Geffen may have differences with the Clintons. That doesn't really have anything to do with our campaign.
Now, bear in mind, Senator Clinton didn't decry a South Carolina supporter who said Barack Obama's campaign would bring down the Democratic Party because he's black. Now, Robert, I just have this to ask. Isn't it great to see a woman and a black person fighting over the presidency? Isn't this progress?
In a way, yes. As a matter of fact, it is. It shows that they can play with, pardon the expression, with the big old boys. Though I will say this, given where we are, it's almost like they're playing the World Series before spring training has even begun. If I can use that metaphor, I mean it's so incredibly early, and they are it's like a steel cage wrestling match. Now I'm really mixing my metaphors, but no, it is. Pretty good to see Hillary Clinton, a former first lady, now senator, Barack Obama, who, you know, a little bit more than two years ago, was a no-name Illinois state senator, and now they're going at it hammer and tong. Though I would say this, that for Obama, who is trying to create a generational appeal and try to be above the usual kind of politics, as soon as he gets dragged down into the mud, which the Clintons are very, very good at battling, I think he is going to end up looking more besmirched than Mrs. Clinton will.
All right, Joe, you're at the Washington Post. You're an editor for the Washington Post. I know you guys cover a lot of politics. Are you happy? Are you happy right now?
Well, I think that this kind of thing does make politics good spectator sports, it doesn't necessarily make me happy. However, this is so early that it doesn't necessarily have to have an impact on the long-term campaign. My guess is that sooner or later we're going to see Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama playing lovey-dovey on some stage together and praising each other to the hilt and trying to put all of this behind them. If they get into a mudslinging match over the long term, they certainly realize it won't do anything but help the Republicans, who could sit back and watch it all with a certain amount of glee.
Professor Berry, I got two questions for you.
Okay.
The first one, and I'll give them one at a time. If there were to be a split ticket with Obama and Clinton going together eventually, who do you think would be on top of that ticket?
I don't think Obama would be willing to be in second place. I'll answer it that way.
All right. And given the fact that Oprah has praised Barack Obama, and he is...
And Oprah controls the world.
Yeah, pretty much. I know. I'm trying to
live... At least the publishing industry.
I'm just trying to live in her world. But, yeah. You know, now that Barack Obama has had this meteoric rise, what does he need to do as a black man? And there's been very much debate over what does it mean to be African/American versus descended from slaves and indentured servants. But as a black man, which he is, what does he need to do in terms of the political race that someone like Hillary Clinton might not have to do because she is white?
Well, one thing he has to do is prove that even though he's smart and he went to Harvard, that he really has some substance to what he's putting forward in his campaign. And I know his staff is working hard on coming up with substantive ideas. He can only go so far on the hope and the transformation message that he's giving and his attractiveness as a candidate. After a while, that's like meeting a guy or meeting a woman that you fall in love with over a coffee, and then you find out, you will start wondering if they really have a brain. So he's got to come up with some you know, substance, and if he keeps his style going and doesn't get into the fray and comes up with some substance, then I think he can stay in for the long haul. But he's got to figure out what the timing is on that, because when you come up with substance, you have some people who like what you say and some people who don't like what you say. When you talk about hope and transformation, then everybody loves you.
Well, Joe, sorry to interrupt, but...
And Hillary Clinton doesn't have to do that, Faria. That was my point. She already, people know she has substance.
Exactly.
They worry about her style and all the rest of that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Joe or Robert can jump in on this. I mean, Hillary Clinton was part... not paid, but part of the team that dealt with health care in the Clinton administration. And that was a huge defeat for them in the short term. But in the long term now, some people are saying, yeah, it was a good idea to really deal with a health care crisis in America. So is Barack Obama, do you think, going to stake his claim around a single issue?
No, I doubt that. I doubt that. I don't think any one candidate running for president can afford to be a single-issue candidate. And I think certainly health care is a major item which certainly will come up. We just had a report earlier this week talking about the increasing cost of health care and how soon it will take a 20% of every dollar spent in this country. So while that will certainly be a key issue, it certainly is not going to be the only issue. And right now it is not the top issue. The top issue is the war in Iraq, and that's certainly going to continue to be the top issue for the duration of this campaign, I'm sure.
And in fact, Obama can make the argument that Hillary, for all of her policy experience, for Democratic voters on the war, that was a single policy issue which she got wrong. And there's this big argument when they appear in all these forums about the fact she does not want to call her decision to vote for the war a mistake, quote unquote. So Obama, in a sense, can use a number of procedural motions and so forth in the Senate, but introducing a number of measures in terms of when the troops should withdraw to try and show his mastery on that particular topic.
I don't think he can be a Johnny One Note and
that.
And I also think that it's a long time between here and the Iowa caucus. And by that time, the conditions on the war front will have changed.
I've met at least two or three black people in Iowa.
Yes, and conditions will have changed substantially by the time of the hour. So he can't be a Johnny One
Note. That was a joke.
I'm just saying he's got to come up with some other stuff. Okay, well, I'll laugh, Mariah.
Yeah, I also say, too, but the thing that, that both Senator Clinton and Senator Obama have to keep in mind is, and this goes to Joe's point, they have to be careful not to continue the mudslinging for too long, because we're about 11 months out before any votes are going to be cast. If over this time that the Democratic electorate becomes tired of these two, there's a certain individual who may be lurking in the shadows who can take advantage of that.
And his John name, Edwards.
No, that's not who I'm talking about. His name is Al Gore. And by this time next year, Al Gore.
Oh, but do you think Al's going to run for real?
Let me finish. Just let me finish. By this time next year, Al Gore may own both an Oscar, a Nobel Peace Prize, and has also already has a history of a wide swath on a broad amount of policy issues that can put both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama to shame.
Well, my guess is they will kiss and make up quickly, because I think each knows that it's to their advantage to put this behind them as fast as they can.
All right. Well, on that note, I need to reintroduce everybody. Not that you have a lot of confusion. Joe Davidson, editor for The Washington Post, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and Robert George, editorial writer, New York Post. I am Farai Chidea, and you are listening to NPR's News and Notes, where we slice and dice the issues of the day. Speaking of black people in government, Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick hasn't been in office long, but he's already admitting that he, quote, screwed up, his words, not mine. He's the state's first black governor, and he used taxpayer dollars to pay for new furniture for his office, over $1,000 monthly lease payments on a Cadillac, and also he hired a $72,000 a year assistant for his wife, an aide. Now, he promised to pay back half of the monthly car note, repay the $30,000 used to furnish his corner office. Professor Berry.
Yes, can I have that one?
Yes,
about
please.
My old friend DeVal Patrick.
Yeah.
And I love DeVal, but he fell into the oldest pit you fall into when you go into government in the world. I almost fell in it when I first got to government, and my assistant said to me, don't you want a decorator to come in and redecorate the office and buy all this furniture and do all this? And I called up Judge Leon Higginbottom, a wise person who had been long in government, and said, what is this all about? He said, don't do it. The furniture that's there is good enough for you. Don't get a new car. Don't do anything because you will be attacked for it. It doesn't make any sense. You may think it sounds reasonable, but to the public it does not. It sounds like you're greedy. And be the person who can be a minimalist and get by with no change. And DeVal doesn't have good advisors or strong ones if he didn't have anybody in place to tell him that. It was the biggest mistake going in. He can overcome it, but it has smeared his campaign was so clean and so honest, and he's such a great guy. And so he just fell into it. He didn't mean it, but he just didn't have good advice, and now he has to overcome it.
Robert?
I am amazed to say that I agree with everything that Dr. Berry said. It's the best thing that can be said about this is it's happening in the first month or so of the administration. It's a big bump. It's a big bump for him to stumble over, and it is certainly, pardon the expression, kind of colored the perception of him in the first few weeks. But it is certainly something that he can recover from if he gets to work on the budget deficit. And the other issues facing him. Ironically, it could have been even worse if not for the fact that Tom Brady, their star quarterback, had a child out of wedlock, and that took up some of the front pages of the Boston Herald.
I think this shows the importance of image in politics, because the amount of money we're talking about really is very little given the budget of the state of Massachusetts. But the image is so important. One columnist had a headline that said, that called DeVal Patrick Governor Deluxe. And so if you're stuck with that kind of image, it then makes it more difficult to proceed with the kinds of programs that you really want to take center stage. And this comes at a time when he's asking the state to try to deal with a $1 billion deficit. And so it's clearly sending a mixed signal which he got on the bad side of. Now, to his credit, he did acknowledge that he made a big mistake. And as we've seen, politicians often will not say, I screwed up. And so I think that he can clearly overcome this. And as I think Robert said, it's fortunate and Mary, too, that this is early in his tenure, just a month or so into it. And so if he gets down to the business of improving services, health care, education, and other essential services to the people of Massachusetts, when it comes time for reelection, that this will probably just be a minor item.
Joe's very right about the symbolism issue. He has to unfortunately be very careful, because obviously, given what we're talking about here, the particular idea of the first black man as governor of Massachusetts, at least one Boston columnist referred to this Cadillac that they were renting out as a pimp mobile. So there are those kind of ugly associations that are not too far from the surface when these kind of things pop up involving black people in government.
What this tells us, though, Farai, is that DeVal does not have some seasoned advisor, like when I went to Judge Higginbottom, who could have told him, or somebody he checks with. He better work on that, because he needs that going in here, because there are other mistakes he can make.
Well,
you
Mary,
check yourself before you wreck yourself.
That's right. Always good to have an NWA reference.
Ice Cube, right?
Ice Cube solo. Excuse me. I'm trying to be part of the hip hop generation, but I'm too old. All right, let's do a speed round on the HPV vaccine. Merck and Company, the manufacturer of the HPV vaccine, is suspending its push for mandatory schoolgirl vaccinations effective immediately. Now, this vaccine guards against cervical cancer. Parents and medical groups pressured Merck and Company to stop lobbying lobbying and privately funding the movement to require 11 and 12-year-old girls to get the vaccination in order to attend school. Now, Merck stopped the push after profiting more than $200 million. So does this decision make a difference? And first of all, HPV is a leading cause of cervical cancer. So speed round, although I have taken up all the time.
It makes a difference, and Cortland Malloy in the Washington Post column was the first guy to raise an objection to it there in D.C., and people attacked him and said, don't you know young black girls are going to get this because they're sexually active when the black teenage pregnancy rates are going down? And also, the news says that the verdict is still out on whether there are risks to this, health risks, and Merck is the same people who made Vioxx. So I think we need to slow down here and consider where we're going on this.
Robert, are they profiteering?
I'm not necessarily against the idea of people making profits. However, a number of Christian conservatives obviously raised concerns about this just because of the idea of thinking of it leading to premarital sex. But I think both they and people like Cortland Malloy definitely have a right to say that it's too soon to be pushing this, given that there may be some risk factors that haven't been assessed yet.
Joe?
Well, I think that Merck wanted to reduce its image of being the sole manufacturer of this drug. It's called Gardasil, and then profiting from it after pushing lawmakers to require or strongly encourage school systems to have this to have young women take this drug. You know, this is a company that makes like $22 billion a year, and it's going to make several hundred million, or stands to make $700 million from this particular drug. And as the sole manufacturer of this drug, and then lobbying lawmakers to have this drug, have young girls take this drug, it really put Merck in the position of looking rather mercenary, and I think that's the reason they decided to pull out from this active lobbying campaign.
All right, going to have to wrap it up. Joe Davidson, editor for The Washington Post, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, Robert George of The New York Post. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.